Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. Guess what this week's YouTube is all about? The coronavirus. Are you tired of hearing about it? Well, the story is not just the virus, but all of the social, political, economic, moral reaction to the virus. You know, I was considering addressing the virus when it surfaced at the beginning of the month, but then it wasn't a major concern compared to all of the policies and the morals of the politicians running for president. But that's all forgotten. One thing we do see in all this is how fast the narrative and the mood of the country can change overnight. In a small way, this virus outbreak illustrates and foreshadows 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 3. While they're saying peace and safety, then destruction will come upon them suddenly. Like labor pains upon a woman with child, and they will not escape. No, we're not in the apocalypse, but these events merely foreshadow the greater day of the Lord. As Jesus said, these are merely the beginning of birth pangs, but the end is not yet. But we do see in this virus outbreak that things can change overnight, reminding us of Jesus' words on the Mount of Olives, Matthew 24, 42. Be on the alert, for you do not know which day your Lord is coming. I record my radio programs almost a week before they air. This is to accommodate Christian radio stations that like to get the audio in at least a week in advance. And in many cases, my program is old news before it is even heard by people, because the media narrative seems to change every 10 days. In fact, this has been a problem for me in addressing relevant topics. Quite often, the public has moved on to a different issue by the time I address the old issue. So don't be surprised if in a few weeks, when the weather warms up, when the flu season is over, that this whole crisis is forgotten, or maybe worse, preempted by a greater crisis. I also expect over the next few weeks that there's going to be all sorts of criticism toward the government's response. Some people are already calling it a draconian, overblown, hysterical response. Someone posted on Facebook, close down the media for 30 days and watch 80% of the world's problems go away. Well, that's an exaggeration for the sake of humor, but we get the point. The media can help or hurt a situation by their hype. It's always a wise thing to maintain a degree of skepticism. Despite the veneration of modern science, the experts can be wrong. They've been wrong many times in our lifetime. We could make a whole list of that. And sometimes it's the outlying voices, the silenced voices, that get it right. So we always need to have some healthy suspicion. Now, we don't want to act like know-it-alls, like everything is nonsense, and we call everything a government conspiracy. But at the same time, we know that there is this herd mentality, mass hysteria, groupthink. People can be lemmings. Those are those little hamsters that if one jumps off the cliff, they all jump off the cliff. You know, it's interesting that in Great Britain, they're taking a different approach to the virus. Rather than shutting everything down and quarantining everyone, they're following what they call a herd immunity approach. Like in all flu viruses, you want healthy people to mildly get sick, so the population can build up their immunities, because you can't completely stop a virus. And new flu strains spread every year. Every year in the United States, at least 12,000 people die from the flu. In the long run, by having healthy people build up immunities, that will eventually stop the spread of the virus to elderly people who can't handle the new strains. This is the natural course. So rather than shutting everything down, Britain is just quarantining the elderly and those with health problems Besides, in a few weeks, the weather's going to warm up. Heat and light will kill many airborne viruses, and the flu season is normally over. Now, in America, the plan is to keep the virus from spreading at all until the flu season is over, and it's expected that there'll be a vaccine by this fall when the flu season begins all over again. Jared Sitchell, a writer at the Daily Wire and Prager University, writes the following. In the U.S., then why isn't it the top priority to specifically protect older Americans? Why isn't the loudest message from government officials for seniors to self-quarantine as it appears to be in the United Kingdom? Wouldn't a measure like this better address the bend the curve challenge than telling the entire population to stay inside, thus shutting down the economy? Well, I think it's just a good thing that Britain has taken a different approach. We should want different approaches so that we all learn what works the best. Imagine in the end if the deaths in the UK are identical to the deaths in the United States, that the virus could not be contained long term, shutting down the economy made no difference. But now from a sociological perspective, social leaders can be diversity adverse, because diversity means that their decisions can be judged. If there is uniformity, then nobody will ever know what would have, could have been. You know, imagine if there was only communism and there was no free market capitalism to show an alternative. The Soviet Union collapsed because the United States was so successful. The Soviet governmental, authoritarian, totalitarian, government control, government ownership could not keep up with the biblical model in the United States of private ownership. So it was good to have competing systems. Well, that's a whole other program for another day. But in regard to this one aspect of the pandemic, the response, in our day, in our culture, it's almost impossible to have different responses or even measured responses because we have this climate of politicians and lawyers. If an individual or business doesn't act according to the perceived groupthink, they're afraid of being sued for not acting responsibly. And politicians today err on the side of safety because they're terrified of public disapproval. If they do too little and the problem gets out of control, that will be used against them by their political opponent in the next election. But if these politicians do too much, throw too much money at the problem, impose ridiculous, draconian measures, then the politicians can always claim that they saved the day. Because nobody can know for sure what would have really happened if the politicians had taken a moderate approach. So in this climate, there can easily be overreaction. President Trump proposes $2.5 billion to help the situation, but the Democrats say it's not enough. It has to be $8.5 billion without even these agencies asking for the money. You know, here's a significant law of God for Israel. We have this principle for social leaders. In Exodus chapter 23, verse 2, "You shall not follow the mass, as in doing evil, nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after a multitude." And Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 7, "You shall not show partiality in judgment. You shall hear the small and the great alike. You shall not fear man, for the judgment is God's." Now, these texts have many applications, and one of the applications is this issue of mob mentality. Now, I'm not saying our government is reacting wrongly to the coronavirus. I just want us to be aware that when a society has wrong values, a fear of man, it will make many wrong decisions, where everything becomes a crisis that needs to be solved with extreme governmental interventions. When a nation loses its biblical principles, few people have the courage to think outside of mass hysteria. Instead, they placate it. Anyway, that's not the topic for today's program. But the point I just made is an example of how this pandemic brings up so many different topics. There are just so many great spiritual lessons to be learned in this event. In fact, there is more to be said about the people's reaction to the virus than the virus itself. As I heard one health worker say, the pandemic of fear is just as much a problem as the virus. So let me share some lessons, and I'll conclude with one major lesson. This will likely be a 2, 3, maybe 4-part series. I'll try to focus on the timeless truths because the specifics seem to change every day. First, much could be said about the virus itself. I'm sure you've heard all the science. A virus, or this virus, is simply a new strain of the flu, influenza. Influenza is a 15th century Spanish word to describe the disease because the people in that day thought the disease was influenced by the stars and the planets and the atmosphere. But it's a great descriptive word, influence. And just like we can physically influence one another, we can infect people with diseases, we can influence other people spiritually. We can infect people with sin, as we have in the fall of Adam. Romans chapter 5, verse 12. Therefore, just as through one man, sin entered into the world, and death through sin, and so death spread to all men, for all have sinned. Sin spreads like a disease, like a genetic disease. And have you noticed that the Bible uses the influence of disease to be an illustration of the influence of sin? That is why the Old Testament has all of these laws concerning leprosy. Yes, it was for public health, but there was to be a spiritual lesson behind it. Just like we need to stay away from disease, we need to stay away from sin. Like a disease, sin needs to be isolated, cut off. And sin can spread just like a disease. And sin is the worst disease. Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 8. Be careful against the infection of leprosy, that you diligently observe and do according to all that the Levitical priests teach you, as I have commanded them, so you shall be careful to do. And not only is there the illustration of leprosy, there is also yeast, leaven, a fungus. Why do you think at the Passover, the Jews were told to clean their homes and remove any traces of leaven? Because it was to be an illustration of sin. Not that fungus or mold or bacteria or viruses are sin, but they illustrate the contagion of sin. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 9. Your boasting is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Clean out the old leaven so that you may be a new lump, just as you are in fact unleavened. For Christ our Passover has been sacrificed. Therefore, let us celebrate the feast, not with the old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. And in Galatians chapter 5, verse 9, in reference to the influence or the influenza of false teachers, Galatians 5, 9, a little leaven leavens the whole lump of dough. So these pathogens are an illustration of sin, and they're to remind us of the sin problem. And so here's the point. The serious disease in America that is spreading, that's killing people, is sin. But the unsaved miss that point. Would that we had the same concern and we took the same precautions against sin as we do the Wuhan virus. More people have died by abortion in the last minute than have died from this virus over the last 6 months. And yet no one has any moral outrage over the death of these innocent babies. Our priorities and our values are messed up. And again, it's seen in our reaction to this virus. But back to the virus. You know, these are killing machines. If it weren't for the fact that we've grown accustomed to them, we would consider them some sort of sci-fi invasion. Bacteria is a living organism that invades the body. Most bacteria can be killed with molds, like penicillin. But viruses are not alive. They are DNA structures encased in protein, so small that you can only see them with an electronic microscope. When they enter your body, they invade a cell, and they reprogram your cell to replicate themselves. Then they destroy that cell, and millions of these new viruses escape from that cell and invade other cells in your body. Now, if they are DNA viruses like smallpox, they have a stable genome that your body can detect and build up antibodies. But if they're RNA viruses like influenza, they change every year. That's why you have to get vaccinated every year for the possible new strains that might be out there. Plus, most of these RNA viruses, like SARS and MERS and H1N1 and bird flu and coronavirus, have all jumped from animal species to man. SARS and corona have been proven to be from bats. So, what evil creatures, these pathogens? What are they even doing here on Earth? Is not the death of old age enough? Well, apparently not. With the curse, all creation was changed. And now the very organisms that were made to help us, God's sanitation workers in the environment, are now out to kill us. Why? Because the curse was needed to hinder sin and to put within us the fear of God. It causes us to see our vulnerability and our need for God. Remember before the Noahic flood, people lived a very long time, 500, 600, 700, 900 years, because the genetics were closer to Adam and Eve. But in that environment, the Bible says in Genesis chapter 6 that every thought of these people's hearts were only evil continually. And now today, the average age is between 76 and 78. And even in those few years, people are partying like there's no tomorrow. They strut around the earth like they're little gods. Pride is their necklace. Even the Apostle Paul had to be humbled by a thorn in the flesh to keep from exalting himself. You want a good text concerning God's purpose for disease, what the Bible calls pestilence? Exodus chapter 9, verse 14. For this time, I will send all my plagues on you and your servants and your people, so that you may know that there is no one like me in all the earth. For if by now I had put forth my hand and struck you and your people with pestilence, you would then have been cut off from the earth. God sent plagues upon Egypt to rebuke and humble that nation. God sent them in measure, gradually, so that the entire nation was not wiped out. But in Exodus chapter 9, God makes the point, I could have put forth my hand and in a moment wiped out everyone with disease. Also, pestilence is described in Psalm 91. He, God, will cover you with his pinions, and under his wings you may seek refuge. His faithfulness is a shield and bulwark. You will not be afraid of the terror by night or of the arrow that flies by day, of the pestilence that stalks in darkness, or of the destruction that lays waste at noon. 1,000 may fall at your side and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not approach you. The terror by night are the enemies we don't see, like disease, which has killed more people than all wars combined. And this is the pestilence that stalks in the darkness. But the promise is that God will protect his people. Not that Christians will never get sick, but no virus will enter your body without God's permission. Now, if you're like most people and you're told to stay home, I recommend that in your free time, you might want to read The Mask of the Red Death by Edgar Allan Poe. In fact, you can find a reading of this poem on YouTube by Basil Rathbone. Well, in short, Edgar Allan Poe tells how the elites of the society isolated themselves from the peasants who were experiencing the plague, the Red Death. And locked behind palace walls, the elites were having a masquerade party. Little did they know that the Red Death came to the party. Quote, "And now was acknowledged the presence of the Red Death. He had come like a thief in the night. And one by one dropped the revelers in their blood-bedewed halls of their revel, and died each in the despairing posture of his fall. And the life of the ebony clock went out with that of the last of the gay, and the flames of the tripod expired, and darkness and decay and the Red Death held illimitable dominion over all. You cannot hide from death." In the Black Death, 1347, the children sang, "Ring around the rosy, a pocket full of posies, ashes, ashes, we all fall down. First comes the sign of the disease, a red circular rash, and all the spices that people put in their pockets, the rosies could not save. So ashes, ashes, we all fall down, dust to dust, ashes to ashes, the curse of death." Genesis chapter 3, verse 19. "By the sweat of your face, you will eat bread till you return to the ground, because from it you are taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return." And this brings me to my second observation regard to this pandemic, the fear and the panic. I spoke with someone the other day who had a relative who became irrational and irate because there was this incredibly remote possibility that this individual was exposed to the coronavirus through a sick person. My daughter-in-law was in the grocery store the other day. She turned away from her cart for a moment, and a woman snatched the one pack of toilet paper she had in her cart. And this woman already had three packs in her cart. So my daughter-in-law turned and said to her, like, "What are you doing?" And the woman said, "Well, there's a limit of four. I only have three and I need this one." Well, the really sad part of this story is that my daughter-in-law is obviously 9 months pregnant and people are stealing from her cart. So if there's this much fear over a flu virus, what kind of fear is there going to be in the real apocalypse? We can better understand Luke chapter 21, verse 26, where Jesus said about when the apocalypse takes place, men will faint from fear, or fainting from fear, and the expectation of the things which are coming upon the world, for the powers of the heavens will be shaken. They are so fearful that they're passing out. Now, if I were unsaved, and I didn't know the Lord, and I didn't have assurance of salvation, if I didn't know that nothing will separate me from the love of God, neither tribulation, distress, persecution, famine, nakedness, peril, sword, I would be petrified. Christians may forget what it's like to have no assurance of salvation, to be without God. And that's Hebrews chapter 2, where we're told that the fear of death holds the unsaved in bondage, in slavery. Hebrews 2:14, "Therefore, since the children share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise also partook of the same," speaking about Jesus, "that through death he might render powerless him who had the power of death, that is the devil, and might free those who through fear of death were subject to slavery all their lives." That fear is real, especially when people who have lived their lives in denial are suddenly faced with the reality that they can soon lose everything, even their life. As is often said, nobody believes in his own death, but you better start believing. And in regard to this fear, God's message in the book of the Revelation, in the apocalypse, when everyone is fearing the end of the world, the angel says, "Don't fear that, fear God." Revelation 14:7. "And he said with a loud voice," the angel, "Fear God and give him glory, because the hour of his judgment has come. Worship him who made heaven and the earth and the seas and the springs of water." And this is what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 10. "Do not fear those who kill the body, whether that be people or a virus or a tragedy, but they're unable to kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Turn your fear of a virus, a fear of death, fear of losing a job, into a respect and a reverence for God, and turn to him in repentance. So I've only had time to discuss two biblical truths relative to the coronavirus. I'll continue this next week, but let me close with just one point. It's God who sends plagues and pestilence. God ordains whatever comes to pass. It's not an accident of nature. God is not asleep at the switch. Amos chapter 3, verse 6. If a trumpet blows in the city, warning of an impending danger, will not the people tremble? If a calamity occurs in a city, has not the Lord done it? Also, Isaiah 45, 6, that men may know from the rising to the setting of the sun that there is no one besides me. I am the Lord, there is no other, the one forming light and creating darkness, causing well-being and creating calamity. I am the Lord who does all these things. And God does this to get the attention of sinners. You ask, why can't God simply change people's hearts through a divine fiat? Why does it take this physical stage called the earth? Well, because God just uses this physical world to teach us the knowledge of good and evil. As C.S. Lewis said, pain is God's megaphone. Pain is a gift from God that nobody wants, but it's necessary to warn us and limit us so that we can come to salvation. C.S. Lewis wrote a little book called The Problem of Pain. It's very short, maybe just 120 pages. I do recommend this for your library. He writes the following. My own experience is something like this. I am progressing along the path of life in my ordinarily, contentedly fallen godless condition. Absorbed in a merry meeting with my friends for the morrow, or a bit of work that tickles my vanity today. A holiday or a new book, when suddenly a stab of stomach pains that threatens serious disease, or a headline in the newspaper that threatens us all with destruction, sends this whole pack of cards tumbling down. At first, I'm overwhelmed, and all my little happiness looks like broken toys. Then slowly and reluctantly, bit by bit, I try to bring myself into the frame of mind that I should be at all times. I remind myself that all of these toys were never intended to possess my heart, that my true good is in another world, and my only true treasure is Christ. And perhaps by God's grace, I succeed, and for a day or two, become a creature consciously dependent on God and drawing its strength from the right source. But the moment the threat is withdrawn, my whole nature leaps back to the toys. Thus, the terrible necessity of tribulation is only too clear. That is just so true, so well written. Suffering is necessary to bring us back to God because we rarely come any other way. The prodigal son in Luke 15 did not come to his senses until he had to feed the pigs, until he had a job he didn't like, until he was hungry. We're driven back to our Heavenly Father by suffering, and it's worth it. Pain began after man fell into sin. Genesis 3:17, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree, which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat from it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall grow for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you will eat bread till you return to the ground. This was a curse, but this was also a blessing. It was a blessing for mankind that mankind would be given pain to drive him away from his sin and back to God. Lewis writes, "No doubt pain, as God's megaphone, is a terrible instrument. It may lead to a final and unrepentant rebellion, but it gives the only opportunity that the bad man can have for amendment. It removes the veil. It plants the flag of truth within the fortress of the rebel soul. It shatters the illusion that all is well. While our life is agreeable, we will not surrender it to God. What then can God do in our interest but to make our own life less agreeable to us and take away the plausible sources of false happiness? Everyone has noticed how hard it is to turn our thoughts to God when everything is going well for us. We have all we want is a terrible saying when all does not include God. We find God an interruption. So suffering is the only way we will see that we're lost, wretched temporal beings in need of salvation. Again, pain is a gift from God. It's a gift that nobody wants, or rather, it's a gift that no one appreciates. Lewis writes, "We are not merely imperfect creatures who must be improved. We are rebels who must lay down our arms. Our self-will must be killed. And mortification is made easier by pain. The human spirit will not even begin to surrender self-will as long as all seems to be well with it." So pain is remedial. Pain is a blessing. It is meant to bring the unsaved to God and to bring the saved to more holiness. Thank you for including God and country as just one part of your discipleship in the Word. Stay safe, stay strong in the Lord, and may Jesus Christ reign.